Chapter 7. Just as London and Southwark, Weymouth is a sweet, clean, agreeable town, considering its low situation, and close to the sea. It is well built, and has a great many good substantial merchants in it who drive a considerable trade, and have a good number of ships belonging to the town. They carry on now, in time of peace, a trade with France, but, besides this, they trade also to Portugal, Spain, Newfoundland, and Virginia, and they have a large correspondence also up in the country for the consumption of their returns. Especially the wine trade and the Newfoundland trade are considerable here. Without the harbor is an old castle, called Sandfoot Castle, and over against them, where there is a good road for ships to put in on occasions of bad weather, is Portland Castle, and the road is called Portland Road. While I was here once, there came a merchant ship into that road called Portland Road under a very hard storm of wind. She was homeward bound from Oporto for London, laden with wines, and as she came in she made signals of distress to the town, firing guns for help, and the like, as is usual in such cases. It was in the dark of the night that the ship came in, and, by the help of her own pilot, found her way into the road, where she came to an anchor, but, as I say, fired guns for help. The venturous Weymouth men went off, even before it was light, with two boats to see who she was, and what condition she was in, and found she was come to an anchor, and had struck her topmasts, but that she had been in bad weather, had lost an anchor and cable before, and had but one cable to trust to, which did hold her, but was weak, and as the storm continued to blow, they expected every hour to go on shore and split to pieces. Upon this the Weymouth boats came back with such diligence, that in less than 3 hours they were on board them again with an anchor and cable, which they immediately bent in its place, and let go to assist the other, and thereby secured the ship. It is true, that they took a good price of the master for the help they gave him, for they made him draw a bill on his owners at London for £12 for the use of the anchor, cable, and boat, besides some gratuities to the men. But they saved the ship and cargo by it, and in 3 or 4 days the weather was calm, and he proceeded on his voyage, returning the anchor and cable again, so that, upon the whole, it was not so extravagant as at first I thought it to be. The Isle of Portland, on which the castle I mentioned stands, lies right against this port of Weymouth. Hence it is that our best and whitest freestone comes, with which the Cathedral of St. Paul's, the Monument, and all the public edifices in the City of London are chiefly built, and it is wonderful, and well worth the observation of a traveller, to see the quarries in the rocks from whence they are cut out, what stones, and of what prodigious a size are cut out there. The island is indeed little more than one continued rock of freestone, and the height of the land is such that from this island they see in clear weather above half over the channel to France, though the channel here is very broad. The sea off of this island, and especially to the west of it, is counted the most dangerous part of the British Channel. Due south, there is almost a continued disturbance in the waters, by reason of what they call two tides meeting, which I take to be no more than the sets of the currents from the French coast, and from the English shore meeting. This they call Portland Race, and several ships, not aware of these currents, have been embayed to the west of Portland, and been driven on shore on the beach, of which I shall speak presently, and they're lost. To prevent this danger, and guide the mariner in these distresses, they have within these few months set up two lighthouses on the two points of that island, and they had not been many months set up, with the directions given to the public for their bearings, but we found 3 outward bound East India ships which were in distress in the night, in a hard extreme gale of wind, were so directed by those lights, that they avoided going on shore by it, which, if the lights had not been there, would inevitably happen to their destruction. This island, though seemingly miserable, and thinly inhabited, Yet the inhabitants being almost all stone-cutters, we found there were no very poor people among them, and when they collected money for the rebuilding St. Paul's, they got more in this island than in the great town of Dorchester, as we were told. Though Portland stands a league off from the mainland of Britain, yet it is almost joined by a prodigious rift of beach, that is to say, of small stones cast up by the sea which runs from the island so near the shore of England, that they ferry over with a boat and a rope, the water not being above half a stone's throw over, and the said rift of beach ending, as it were, at that inlet of water, turns away west, and runs parallel with the shore quite to Abbotsbury, which is a town about 7 miles beyond Weymouth. I name this for two reasons. First, to explain again what I said before of ships being embayed and lost here. This is when ships coming from the westward omit to keep a good offing, or are taken short by contrary winds, and cannot weather the high land of Portland, but are driven between Portland and the mainland. If they can come to an anchor, and ride it out, well and good. And if not, they run on shore on that vast beach, and are lost without remedy. On the inside of this beach, and between it and the land, there is, as I have said, an inlet of water which they ferry over, as above, to pass and repass to and from Portland. This inlet opens at about 2 miles west, and grows very broad, and makes a kind of lake within the land of a mile and a half broad, and near 3 miles in length, the breadth unequal. At the farthest end west of this water is a large duck koi, and the verge of the water well grown with wood, and proper groves of trees for cover for the fowl. In the open lake, or broad part, is a continual assembly of swans. Here they live, feed, and breed, and the number of them is such that, I believe, I did not see, so few as 7,000 or 8,000. Here they are protected, and here they breed in abundance. We saw several of them upon the wing, very high in the air, whence we supposed that they flew over the rift of beach, which parts the lake from the sea, to feed on the shores as they thought fit, and so came home again at their leisure. From this duck koi west, the lake narrows, and at last almost closes, till the beach joins the shore, and so Portland may be said, not to be an island, but part of the continent. And now we came to Abbotsbury, a town anciently famous for a great monastery, and now eminent for nothing but its ruins. From hence we went on to Bridport, a pretty large corporation town on the seashore, though without a harbor. Here we saw boats all the way on the shore, fishing for mackerel, which they take in the easiest manner imaginable, for they fix one end of the net to a pole set deep into the sand, then, the net being in a boat, they row right out into the water some length, then turn and row parallel with the shore, veering out the net all the while, till they have let go all the net, except the line at the end, and then the boat rows on shore, when the men, hauling the net to the shore at both ends, bring to shore with it such fish as they surrounded in the little way they rowed. This, at that time, proved to be an incredible number, insomuch that the men could hardly draw them on shore. As soon as the boats had brought their fish on shore, we observed a guard, or watch placed on the shore in several places, who, we found, had their eye, not on the fishermen, but on the country people who came down to the shore to buy their fish, and very sharp we found they were, and some that came with small carts were obliged to go back empty without any fish. When we came to inquire into the particulars of this, we found that these were officers placed on the shore by the justices and magistrates of the towns about, who were ordered to prevent the country farmers buying the mackerel to dung their land with them, which was thought to be dangerous as to infection. In short, such was the plenty of fish, that year that the mackerel, the finest and largest I ever saw, were sold at the seaside 100 for a penny. From Bridport, a town in which we see nothing remarkable, we came to Lyme, the town particularly made famous by the landing of the Duke of Monmouth, and his unfortunate troops in the time of King James II. Of which I need say nothing, the history of it being so recent in the memory of so many living. This is a town of good figure, and has in it several eminent merchants who carry on a considerable trade to France, Spain, Newfoundland, and the Straits. And though they have neither creek or bay, road or river, they have a good harbor, but it is such a one as is not in all Britain besides, if there is such a one in any part of the world. It is a massy pile of building, consisting of high and thick walls of stone, raised at first with all the methods that skill and art could devise, but maintained now with very little difficulty. The walls are raised in the main sea at a good distance from the shore. It consists of one main and solid wall of stone, large enough for carts and carriages to pass on the top, and to admit houses and warehouses to be built on it, so that it is broad as a street. Opposite to this, but farther into the sea, is another wall of the same workmanship, which crosses the end of the first wall, and comes about with a tail parallel to the first wall. Between the point of the first or main wall is the entrance into the port, and the second or opposite wall, breaking the violence of the sea from the entrance, the ships go into the basin as into a pure harbor, and right there as secure as in a millpond, or as in a wet dock. The townspeople have the benefit of this wonderful harbor, and it is carefully kept in repair, as indeed it behoves them to do. But they could give me nothing of the history of it, nor do they, as I could perceive, know anything of the original of it, or who built it. It was lately almost beaten down by a storm, but is repaired again. This work is called the Cobb. The custom house officers have a lodge and warehouse upon it, and there were several ships of very good force, and rich in value in the basin of it when I was there. It might be strengthened with a fort, and the walls themselves are firm enough to carry what guns they please to plant upon it. But they did not seem to think it needful, and as the shore is convenient for batteries, they have some guns planted in proper places, both for the defense of the Cobb and the town also. This town is under the government of a mayor and alderman, and may pass for a place of wealth, considering the bigness of it. Here, we found, the merchants began to trade in the pilchard fishing, though not to so considerable a degree as they do farther west, the pilchards seldom coming up so high eastward as Portland, and not very often so high as Lyme. It was in sight of these hills that Queen Elizabeth's fleet, under the command of the Lord Howard of Effingham, then admiral, began first to engage in a close and resolved fight with the invincible Spanish Armada in 1588, maintaining the fight, the Spaniards making eastward till they came the length of Portland Race, where they gave it over the Spaniards, having received considerable damage, and keeping then closer together. Off of the same place, was a desperate engagement in the year 1672 between the English and Dutch, in which the Dutch were worsted, and driven over to the coast of France, and then glad to make home to refit and repair. While we stayed here some time viewing this town and coast, we had opportunity to observe the pleasant way of conversation as it is managed among the gentlemen of this county and their families, which are, without reflection, some of the most polite and well-bred people in the Isle of Britain. As their hospitality is very great, and their bounty to the poor remarkable, so their generous friendly way of living with, visiting, and associating one with another is as hard to be described as it is really to be admired. They seem to have a mutual confidence in and friendship with one another, as if they were all relations. Nor did I observe the sharping, tricking temper which is too much crept in among the gaming and horse-racing gentry in some parts of England, to be so much known among them any otherwise than to be abhorred. And yet they sometimes play too, and make matches and horse-races, as they see occasion. The ladies here do not want the help of assemblies to assist in matchmaking, or half-pay officers to run away with their daughters, which the meetings called assemblies in some other parts of England are recommended for. Here is no Berry Fair, where the women are scandalously said to carry themselves to market, and where every night they meet at the play, or at the assembly for intrigue. And yet I observed that the women do not seem to stick on hand, so much in this country as in those countries, where those assemblies are so lately set up, the reason of which, I cannot help saying, if my opinion may bear any weight, is that the Dorsetshire ladies are equal in beauty, and may be superior in reputation. In a word, their reputation seems here to be better kept, guarded by better conduct, and managed with more prudence. And yet the Dorsetshire ladies, I assure you, are not nuns. They do not go veiled about streets, or hide themselves when visited, but a general freedom of conversation agreeable, mannerly, kind, and good runs through the whole body of the gentry of both sexes, mixed with the best of behavior, and yet governed by prudence and modesty such as I nowhere see better in all my observation through the whole isle of Britain. In this little interval also I visited some of the biggest towns, in the northwest part of this county, as Blandford, a town on the River Stour in the road between Salisbury and Dorchester, a handsome well-built town, but chiefly famous for making the finest bone lace in England, and where they showed me some so exquisitely fine as I think I never saw better in Flanders, France, or Italy, and which they said they rated at above £30 sterling a yard. But I suppose there was not much of this to be had. But it is most certain that they make exceeding rich lace in that county, such as no part of England can equal. From thence I went west to Stourbridge, vulgarly called Strawbridge. The town and the country around is employed in the manufacture of stockings, and which was once famous for making the finest, best, and highest prize knit stocking in England. But that trade now is much decayed by the increase of the knitting stocking engine or frame, which has destroyed the hand knitting trade for fine stockings through the whole kingdom, of which I shall speak more in its place. From hence I came to Sherborne, a large and populous town, with one collegiate or conventual church, and may properly claim to have more inhabitants in it than any town in Dorsetshire, though it is neither the county town, nor does it send members to Parliament. The church is still a reverend pile, and shows the face of great antiquity. Here begins the Wiltshire medley clothing, though this town be in Dorsetshire, of which I shall speak at large in its place, and therefore I omit any discourse of it here. Shaftesbury is also on the edge of this county, adjoining to Wiltshire and Dorsetshire, being 14 miles from Salisbury, over that fine downer carpet ground which they call particularly or properly Salisbury Plain. It has neither house nor town in view all the way, and the road, which often lies very broad, and branches often sensibly, might easily cause a traveller to lose his way. But there is a certain never-failing assistance upon all these downs for telling a stranger his way, and that is the number of shepherds feeding, or keeping their vast flocks of sheep which are everywhere in the way, and who with a very little pains a traveller may always speak with. Nothing can be like it. The Arcadian's plains, of which we read so much pastoral trumpery in the poets, could be nothing to them. This Shaftesbury is now a sorry town upon the top of a high hill, which closes the plainer downs, and whence nature presents you a new scene or prospect, viz. Of Somerset and Wiltshire, where it is all enclosed, and grown with woods, forests, and planted hedgerows, the country rich, fertile, and populous. The towns and houses standing thick, and being large and full of inhabitants, and those inhabitants fully employed in the richest and most valuable manufacture in the world, viz. The English clothing, as well the medley or mixed clothing as whites, as well for the home trade as Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.